From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The writer Edward Abbey was doing his own monkey wrenching before he wrote his book, The Monkey Wrench Gang. Putting sugar in bulldozer gas tanks and sand in crankcases, cutting down billboards, he called it night work. So for Abbey, it meant something real and particular, but a new documentary film works through the interpretation of monkey wrenching, because it has come to mean different things to different people. There's no doubt it helped define the modern environmental movement, but the film asks what it means today. Is it symbolic? Is it about direct action? That's what the film is about, Edward Abbey's influence on the battle to protect wilderness in the West. The film is called Wrenched. We'll talk about it after this news.
Hi, this is Benjamin Bombard, one of the producers of Radio West. Our online audio and podcasts are made possible by KUER and its listeners. If you like Radio West, help us make it happen. Become a sustaining member of KUER for as little as $5 a month. You can do that online at KUER.org. And thanks.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're continuing our series on documentaries with a film called Wrenched. It's about the writer and activist Edward Abbey. Explores his influence on the environmental movement, particularly the impact of his 1975 book, The Monkey Wrench Gang. Most of you know monkey wrenching as a kind of a form of sabotage, throwing a monkey wrench into the works. The battle over wilderness and development in the 70s and 80s in particular, it meant sugar in the gas tanks of bulldozers or sand in the crankcases of road graders or clipping barbed wire or toppling fences. It was Abbey's brand of anarchy, his response to strip mining and clear-cutting and chaining. In the film, the writer Charles Bowden says Abbey was a classical anarchist. He didn't trust centralized power, but his innovation, if you could call it that, was that he expanded the idea beyond just humans. He threw animals and nature into the mix. He was the first to combine anarchism with environmentalism. On Thursday, we're screening Wrenched. We're talking about it today, and we invite you to join the conversation. If you have comments or questions, 801-585-WEST is the number, 801-585-9378. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. You can also interact with us during the show by following us on Twitter at Radio West. Joining us on the program today, M.L. Lincoln is with us, produced and directed Wrenched. Her previous documentary film, Drowning River, profiles the environmental activist Katie Lee, who also appears in this latest film. And M.L. Lincoln is joining us today from a radio station in Moab. And M.L. Lincoln, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Hello. Thank you. My voice is a little low. I just got back from Maui, where I lost my voice.
Sounds good to me.
Not a bad place to do it.
No, not at all. Well, thanks for joining us. Jack Leffler is also with us, an aural historian, a writer, a radio producer, sound collage artist, also one of Ed Abbey's closest friends, and he's featured in the film as well, joining us today from a studio in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And Jack Leffler, welcome to you.
Hi, thank you very much for having both of us on your program, and hello, ML.
Hello, dear Jack. How are you? Jack's also the narrator for the film.
Indeed. Ken Sanders is also with us. Let's add a third one in here. The founder and owner, of course, of Ken Sanders Rare Books in Salt Lake City, one of Edward Abbey's friends as well. His publishing house, Dream Garden Press, is responsible for the 10th anniversary edition of The Monkey Wrench Gang, which features the now iconic imagery of the cartoonist R. Crumb. And Ken Sanders, welcome back. Thanks for being with us.
It's always a pleasure, Doug, although with just you and I in the studio and ML and Jack far away, it's kind of lonely in here today.
We'll see what we can do about that. ML, I want to start with you and ask you sort of what got you thinking about all of this. I mean, the idea that before it became a film, what was the idea that you were thinking about?
Well, I live in the West, and I see what's happening to the West. And, of course, I read The Monkey Wrench Gang. And I really wanted to bring a film, because that's a great medium for people to understand and sit and watch something and hear and listen. I wanted to bring all the early eco-activists together. And what a better way to do it than sort of become... They don't need an advocate, but I feel the film is an advocate for their passion. And that is what got me into it, is trying to understand these early eco activists' passion for saving the wilderness.
So we should point out it's about Edward Abbey, sort of. Yes. About Edward Abbey. It's not a biographical piece. It's about his influence, his particular influence on the movement.
That's right. There is a quintessential film about Ed Abbey done by Eric Temple called Voice in the Wilderness, and that will certainly give you a really great look at Abbey as a person with his family and friends. But this is also, Abbey is woven throughout this film as sort of the spokesperson for sabotage and direct action, and really, as Ken Slight says, doing what you can to protect the wilderness in whatever your talent is.
You know, it's interesting. There's this broader theme in the film, that I detected anyway, about the term monkey wrench, about what that means. Because in some ways, you have people today who have a very clear sense of what that means. For some, it's about something physical. You know, it's about an action. It's about movement. For others, it's more symbolic, kind of like a metaphor. Is that part of what the film is about? Is what people mean by that idea of monkey wrenching?
Well, metaphors are good too. It's really about people trying to get out of their complacency, and what does that mean? And that can take many forms, but at least if a metaphor starts it, that's good. And I think Jack can speak to this, and so can Ken.
Yeah. Jack, let me get you involved in this conversation. One of the things that Ed Abbey says, we hear his voice throughout the film, he talks about, he calls himself a displaced person from birth, a person from Appalachia. You are a kindred spirit of his. You're also a displaced person. What do you think, what does he mean? What do you mean by feeling displaced?
Well, actually, when you think about living in the East, where I just was all last week, you're in an environment where you can rarely see more than a half a mile. And one of the things that appealed to both Ed and myself, he got here about 7 or 8 years before I did into the American Southwest. But what appealed to both of us in a big way was the enormous sense of space you can see a long way. Gives you a chance for your mind to really cut loose and just all sorts of other kinds of thinking to happen. Mm. And it was that desert habitat, I think, that appealed to both of us, something we really related to. I was born maybe 130 or 40 miles away from Ed. I was born in West Virginia. He in Indiana, Pennsylvania. But he lived in a place called Home, Pennsylvania, grew up there. And after graduating from high school, he cut loose, hitchhiked around America, and passed through the American Southwest and knew he was hooked forevermore. Mm. That's basically what happened to me. I was sent to the American Southwest in 1957 as a soldier, camped in the Mojave Desert, and I haven't been able to get out of the Southwest since.
Right. Ken Sanders, did Ed Abbey ever say to you, did he ever mention what the clincher moment of when he first saw something, or was it something more general in some ways? Just he was captivated by the West.
As in all things Abbey, it's always best to go to the source, the 21 books, the audio and video clips that ML is so marvelously interwoven into her film. Ed himself spoke of this many, many different times, from the journey home to all of his writings, you know, and as Jack said, he hitchhiked out here, he fell in love with the West, and he never, ever left. It was a lifetime love affair, whether we're talking about the Colorado Plateau deserts of the Four Corners country in Utah, or the Sonoran deserts, the Mojave deserts of California, Arizona, New Mexico, and Mexico. He fell in love with it all.
Before we get to the Monkey Wrench Gang, Ken Sanders, let's talk about Desert Solitaire, because as ML sort of lays out in the film, this is the, in many ways, this is the book really that sets the stage for the environmental movement in some ways. How did Desert Solitaire kind of change the game, do you think?
It was a quiet little book that was conceived in the 1950s, published in the 1960s, and like all his life, Ed Abbey beat to the proverbial different drummer. It came out at the same year as the '68 Chicago trials and all the upheaval of the 60s, but it was a quiet, lyrical little throwback book that was really honest, and it has become, and Ed would be horrified by this, because Ed Abbey never wanted any book of his to become a classic. Well, Ed, too bad, because Desert Solitaire and the Monkey Wrench Gang have become classics. The good part about that, though, is Ed's definition of a classic was a book that everyone talked about and nobody read. That's not true of Ed Abbey's books.
Yeah.
being dead for 25 years has been a great career move for Ed, because he's selling more books now than he ever did alive.
Jack, when did you first encounter Desert Solitaire? Do you remember?
Yeah, I was on a fire lookout in 1968 in the Jicarilla National Forest in northwestern New Mexico. And about once every 3 weeks, I get to go into town, into Durango, for a day to get groceries and everything. And I went into a bookstore, and by golly, there was Desert Solitaire, and Ed's name jumped right out at me. I'd met Ed years before. And so I bought the hardcover book, which I still have. I bought it for $4.95, I believe, and took it up to the fire lookout and started reading it immediately the next morning when the daylight was there. And the book read me. It was an amazing book. It remains an amazing book.
You know, it's Ken, there's a section where you read a section of this book. I want to have you read a little bit of it here, because it sort of gets to this, I think, something that you talk about, this point that for Ed, this was about getting out of the car.
Absolutely. This is from the introduction to the original Desert Solitaire and still reprinted in all editions. Finally, a word of caution. Do not jump into your automobile next June and rush out to the canyon country, hoping to see some of that which I have attempted to evoke in these pages. In the first place, you can't see anything from a car. You've got to get out of the goddamn contraption and walk. Better yet, crawl on hands and knees over the sandstone and through the thorn bush and cactus. When traces of blood begin to mark your trail, you'll see something. Maybe. Probably not. In the second place, most of what I write about in this book is already gone or going under fast. This is not a travel guide, but an elegy, a memorial. You're holding a tombstone in your hands, a bloody rock. Don't drop it on your foot. Throw it at something big and glassy. What do you have to lose? Edward Abbey, Nelson's Marine Bar, Hoboken.
He wrote it in the bar. That's great. ML, we talk about Desert Solitaire. I mean, you include this even before you get to Monkey Wrench Gang. This obviously was important to you, too.
Yes, it is. And just what Ken read is about getting out in the wilderness and being in the wilderness is so important. And I might be diverging here, but Dave Foreman was talking about Rottweiler mommies and keeping kids inside. And I think, you know, these should be books that are in schools and read, and it's a beautiful piece about his time in Arches. And going back to your original question about monkey wrenching, we need direct action now and upheaval, absolute upheaval.
Jack Leffler, I wanted to ask you about, I guess I was surprised from the film just how early it was that Edward Abbey had begun, as you point out in the film, agitating. And he started getting an FBI file, you said, in 1946.
Well, right after he'd gotten out of the Army, one of the big things that he'd wanted to do and did was get all of the students at Indiana University in Indiana, Pennsylvania. The school was not then known as that, but at any rate, Ed got a lot of the students to either burn their draft cards or send them to Eisenhower, to send them to Truman.
Truman, yeah.
Who was still the president. Yeah. And that became the beginning of his FBI file, which was long, arduous, crossed out in many ways because the Freedom of Information Act isn't quite all that free, it turns out.
Yeah.
And but one of the things I was able to extrapolate when I was going through all of those files is I could kind of figure out, at least in many of the instances, who was talking. And that was interesting to me to see who was copying out about Ed.
You know, it's interesting. Here's an area that the film explores where your life, again, converges with Edward Abbey's in the sense that when the bombs were dropped, that seems like another kind of moment that you shared or concern that you shared.
Well, it was for me. That was a very linchpin moment in my life back in July of 1957. I had just arrived at Camp Irwin, as it was then known, about 35 or 8 miles out of Barstow, in an Army band, and we were transported to Desert Rock, the Nevada Proving Grounds. And imagine this. It's pre-dawn Nevada. You're decked out like Frank Buck with a pith helmet and shorts and the whole bit. And you're playing the Stars and Stripes from forever from memory. And all of a sudden, 7 miles away, an A-bomb goes off. And it's excruciating on all fronts. One of the things that was amazing to me was that it seems as though I saw an array of colors that doesn't otherwise appear in nature. But the whole notion of it and what happened to the band as we all watched, we all just stopped playing, everybody completely aware of what was happening, what was being wrought upon, not just the people of Hiroshima and Nagasaki a decade earlier, but also what was being wrought on the biotic community and even the geophysical cradle that held the biotic community there. And to me, well, I've said this, but it was at that moment in time that I realized that I was not the one who was insane. And this is one of the things that Ed and I talked about a lot. He didn't get to see any of the bomb, shouldn't have put it that way. He did not see any bombs go off. I think I saw 3 of them, each one different. And that whole situation back in 1957 really set the course for the rest of my life, which was to react against the kind of madness that we were bringing as a culture into this world.
Mm. Doug, mm-hmm. One of the special features we'll have on the DVD is a story that Terry Tempest Williams and Jack talk about, that they were at different ends of that bomb going off in the Nevada desert. And she tells a story of driving with her family in her station wagon, and the bomb went off, and they thought it was something, a gas truck or something, in front of them. And she had dreams about this forever until she told her dad. And her dad said, well, that was the bombs going off. And consequently, her family have been
profoundly influenced. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One of the ideas of the film, too, it gets at this idea of Edward Abbey's sense of anarchism and the morality of violence, which was his master thesis. That was the title of his master's thesis, Anarchy and the Morality of Violence. I want to play a clip from the film. And in here we hear the writer Charles Bowden. We hear Jack. We hear Edward Abbey as well, talking about this idea of anarchy, because I want to talk a little bit about this. Here's a moment from the film. Wrenched.
People get confused. They think anarchy means, you know, you're going to throw a brick through a window. But what it means is an absolute, in his sense, he was a classical anarchist, meaning he didn't trust centralized power, that any concentration of power is dangerous, and I agree.
He thought that through pure anarchist endeavor, pure democracy could occur, but he had the incredible wisdom to be able to extend that sense, to go beyond the human community, to include the biotic community.
I consider myself almost an absolute egalitarian. I think that all human beings are essentially, in some essential way, equal. By virtue of being alive, living things, we deserve to be respected as individuals. And I'm saying that respect for the value of each human being should be extended to each living thing.
Emil Lincoln, why is this idea of anarchy important to you? Talk a little bit about this theme in the film.
Well, at this point today, 2014, or when I started the film 7 years ago, or ever since all these people were talking about what was to come, and it's here now, is that we need to, as Edward Abbey say, you know, look at the government and question it and don't accept what is going on. And it's about not accepting what is going on and what does that mean one will do. We need that kind of look at our present situation, because if we don't, then we're lost. I don't know if that answers it for you, but for me, that's what it is. It's not only questioning, it's now seeing and really going out and doing something about it.
Jack, that was it, right? I mean, because you mentioned in the film that that Abby was the first, or certainly, if not the first, among the first, to meld anarchism with environmentalism. And I guess this was kind of his innovation in some way, combining these two ideas.
Well, I'm not sure. Actually, it probably evolved in his own mind, going down different trails right down the line. But the upshot was, is that's what he did. He wrote his master's thesis, as you mentioned, Anarchism and the Morality of Violence. There is a distinction between anarchy and anarchism.
Sure, sure.
Anarchism is a practice, a philosophical practice. Anarchy is a state of chaos.
Right.
In Ed's master's thesis, he cited five different anarchist thinkers, starting with Proudhon, Georges Sorel, William Godwin, Mikhail Bakunin, and Peter Kropotkin. Five really great thinkers within that milieu, Peter Kropotkin being the last one alive out of that gang, who wrote a wonderful book entitled Mutual Aid. I've got a lot of Kropotkin's books in my library as well. And I remember Ed in my house sitting out there in the yard reading the entirety of Mutual Aid, the last page of which, and I'm going to paraphrase slightly here, but Peter Kropotkin said, basically, Kropotkin himself was a geographer who had left the gentry in Russia to become an anarchist philosopher, also spent a huge amount of time out in the countryside, and he was in Siberia mapping mountain ranges for a period of 5 years armed with Darwin. And on the last page of that book, Mutual Aid, he said, evolution of species / human culture owes far more to mutual cooperation than mutual antagonism. And that harkens back to what Chuck Boden was saying. It's not just throwing bricks through windows or cutting down billboards. It's actually really understanding the relationship, not just between humans and humans, but between humans and the rest of the biotic community. Mm-hmm. This is something that Ed really understood. Now, I mentioned this in my book, Adventures with Ed, that Ed abhorred the epithet of naturalist. However, one time we were talking about all of these things, and he says that philosophically, he regards himself either as a naturist or a pantheist. And he brings these things together. And one last thought on the subject. After Ed died, I had the great good fortune to spend a day with his philosophy professor, still living at that time, a man by the name of Archie Baim, who had earlier on written an interpretation of the Tao Te Ching, Lao Tzu's great masterpiece from about 2,500 or so years ago, which Ed said to me on several occasions he'd regarded to be the best little book ever written. But basically, Ed saw the flow of nature as that from which to take one's cue in life, rather than from all of the folderol that we allow into our lives. Basically, he saw that we had to turn from an economically dominated paradigm to an ecologically dominated paradigm, because it was economics, money, that was the root of all evil by virtue of being able to supply the kind of power that Lord Acton talked about when he said power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. These are phrases that Ed really thought about and enlarged upon in all of his writing, which Ken Sanders can certainly talk about.
And that word anarchy and anarchism scares people. They don't get it.
Doug, I think it's important to note here that all of Ed's ongoing philosophies of anarchy, anarchism, and the morality of violence never included any harm to any living thing. It was the violence of anarchy and violence against machinery and things, never living beings. And that's one of the dichotomies that flows throughout his writing, and particularly in this post-9/11 age, with everybody being flung with eco-terrorism and all these other labels. I think it's really important to note that underlying philosophy.
Well, he notes it in the film. It's interesting that there is a clip of Edward Abbey talking about that distinction between the idea of terrorism and the idea of sabotage.
And it's un-American to advocate violence against machinery and property.
Ken Sanders is with us, of course, owner of Ken Sanders Rare Books in Salt Lake City. Jack Leffler with us, an oral historian, a writer, a radio producer, author of the book Adventures with Ed, A Portrait of Abbey. And we have M.L. Lincoln with us as well. She directed and produced the documentary Wrenched, which we're showing on Thursday at 7 o'clock at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in downtown Salt Lake City. It's part of our Through the Lens series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. ML and Ken and others are going to join us for, after the film for a Q&A. And I should also mention we're going to be screening the film in Moab at Star Hall on March 15th. We have all of those details on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. We need to take a break, though. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER.
Called Desert Solitaire. Everything you need to know about cactus heads in there. Part-time ranger, part-time writer, and die-hard desert rat. Born 100 years too late and a long way off the map. And he was never one to sugarcoat when he had a point to make.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're profiling another documentary film in our series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. On Thursday, we're going to be screening the film Wrenched, which is about the environmental activist and writer Edward Abbey. It's about his ideas about anarchism and about his book, The Monkey Wrench Gang, which was seen by many as a kind of blueprint for direct action and civil disobedience in the battle over wilderness in the Southwest, then and now. We have with us M.L. Lincoln, who produced and directed the film, Jack Leffler, historian, writer, radio producer. He's featured in the film. Ken Sanders, the founder and owner of Ken Sanders Rare Books, a good friend of Ed's. He's featured in the film as well. He's with us in the studio here. So I wanted to ask a little bit about Jack and Ken, and you in particular, this idea of monkey wrenching. And Jack, you point out in the film, and you obviously write about this in your book, that Ed did his own monkey wrenching before he wrote about it.
Jack and Ed both did a considerable amount of night work some time ago, many decades ago.
However, he's beyond the statute of limitations.
Yeah, it's true. And so what do we mean by that? What is monkey wrenching? I think you get a general sense about it, but talk about that, because it's a for us to get a sense of the term, I want to know what it means.
Well, basically, Ed originally, when he was beginning to write the Monkey Wrench Gang, it was it had different titles. One of the things that he wanted to bring out was the notion of the sabot, the wooden shoe. The word saboteur comes from that. And that was people who threw their wooden shoes into the works, say, on the modern looms that were supplanting the people who are actually weavers in their homes. In other words, the saboteur was, in those days, trying to supplant the Industrial Revolution that was coming down hard on the handcrafted lifestyle, which is something that Ed always truly admired, was a handcrafted lifestyle. But basically, the whole notion of monkey wrenching, as Ken brought out and ML brought out, is that the whole sense of it is taking out the tools of destruction, but in no way harming anybody else. Now, one of the things that Ed talks about a lot, and we really talked about this a lot, is that terrorism, eco-terrorism, is not about saboteurs taking out heavy equipment. It's about governments killing their own people or killing people in other nations. And as at one point, as Ed said, he regarded eco-terrorism as actually a bulldozer driving across a landscape and tearing out trees to make way for a strip mine. That's what the real kind of terrorism is. actually the sort of sabotage that Ed was writing about in the Monkey Wrench Gang and any of the sort of night work that he was engaged in never, ever resulted in harm to a fellow human.
Yeah.
Now, when you think about a lot of the stuff that Ed and I got to know about Ed early on within that particular context was back in 1970 when we were both involved in trying to thwart the Peabody Coal Company strip mining Black Mesa, which is where much of the book The Monkey Wrench Gang takes place, in order to provide coal to supply electricity to pump water out of the Colorado River into the central valleys of Arizona. In other words, the Central Arizona Project. And one thing that really interests me is that no place in that book does the term Central Arizona Project appear. And yet that was sort of the very heart of it. That in between the Central Arizona Project and the Glen Canyon Dam, we're looking at sort of twin bullseyes of the worst environmental debacles visited upon the American Southwest. And I think that many, many people would agree to that. Mm. And what Ed was trying to do was thwart continued disruption of that beautiful landscape that takes place in the Colorado Plateau, which many people regard as possibly one of the most, if not the most beautiful landscape in the world.
Ken Sanders, when did you first see The Monkey Wrench Gang, the book? Did you see a manuscript of it? How did you
no,
first?
No, actually, despite people thinking so, Jack and John Dupuy, Doug Peacock, Ken Slight, folks like that, knew Ed much longer than I did. When I had my shop here in town, The Cosmic Airplane, in the mid-70s, mm-hmm. I first read and became aware of the book when it was published. Ed was still living here in Utah then, down in Moab, and wandered in the store one day. And I probably shouldn't tell this story because it reflects poorly on me, but I took him in the back room of the store and immediately lectured him on the littering habits of Hayduke and Company that quite horrified me at the time, and I guess still do, actually. Despite that beginning, we went on to become friends. And no, I ain't Hayduke because I didn't know Ed Abbey when he was writing
the book. Have wondered, have they?
No, they've said that I was, but that's not physically possible.
You know, there's this shot of the in the film, ML includes this shot of the manuscript. And in Abby's handwriting, it says, "This book will be banned everywhere." ML, talk a little bit about that. He knew it was going to be seen by some as outrageous, I guess.
That's for sure. I don't really know quite what to say about that, except, you know, for those who've read the book and know of Ed.
Well, Jack, you may have know what to say about that book. Did Ed Abbey know that it was going to be seen as outrageous? If he had a sense it was going to be banned?
Well,
he was hoping so. Let's put it that way, Doug. You know what I mean?
I've got one of those manuscripts that brought it down to me. That was the first Monkey Wrench Gang I ever read. It was in Thanksgiving. He and his wife had come down, and the manuscript, I guess it was 74, it may have been 75, but at any rate, he brought me the manuscript and gave it to me, which I treasure. And on the first page, the title page, it says, "Page, Arizona, shithead capital of Coconino County." And I think that sort of said it all. That was in his own handwriting. and on he went. But at any rate, Ed, he knew that he'd written something particularly powerful. And one of the things that was interesting to me was going through his journals when I was writing my own book. He got into this one part about talking about the character development of Doc and Bonnie and Seldom Seen Smith and Hayduke. And he was saying, gee, they all begin to sound like me, and I want to make them lovable. But he also wanted to get his point across. And so the book itself, in a way, it was a huge, wonderful piece of humor. Ed had, by the way, one of the great senses of humor on the planet. It's hard to believe. He still comes to me in dreams. And we still laugh a lot.
Well, see, I actually want to talk about that because this is, as I detected anyway, kind of a theme of the film, this idea that he was going to approach something so maybe not so sacred but so important with a kind of sense of humor. He's sort of taking the piss out of all of this, I think, was important. It's kind of reflected in something Charles Bowden says in the film. Here's another clip from Wrenched.
The Monkey Wrench Gang is an incendiary device bound as a book, because what it says is the salvation of the United States and of the planet is blowing up property that's killing it. Everybody around Ed, including me, wanted to blow up the goddamn dam. He invented a sort of comic scenario, and he implanted the idea. And the real idea isn't blowing up Glen Canyon Dam. It's one, this was a tragedy, and two, this has to be undone.
But that idea, Ken Sanders, of a comic scenario, that was something that appealed to you, because this is something you mentioned in the film, that you had been kind of jaded. Charles Bowden talks about the environmental movement sort of at the time it stalled. It was sort of this right. dull religion. Ken Sanders, talk about that.
Yeah, the Monkey Wrench guy. So, I mean, first of all, Edward Abbey lived to provoke other human beings. He just right. lived for it. He absolutely loved it. All of us have those experiences with him. And the book really motivated me. Ed and I were doing some various activities and things at the time and some publishing ventures. And he called me up one day and he says, Ken, this is Ed, going down to Lone Rock Campground for some kind of spring rites. If you want to talk about that silly calendar, join me. So I was going down to a maze trip. I bonked down to Lake Powell and met these really rude, unfriendly gang of people there. We had a really tense situation till later that night when Ed Abbey showed up, because the last thing I was going to do him was tell him I'm a friend of Ed's, because I didn't like their bedside manner. And they gleefully told me of their plans to drop a 300-foot plastic crack down Glen Canyon Dam the next morning. And that's how I met Earth First, which was the real-life Monkey Wrench Gang.
Yeah, ML, talk about that. I mean, this Earth First is an important part of this film, and this idea of taking on environmentalism with a kind of sense of humor, with a sense of irony, with a sense of theater, that's an important part of this film, too. You want to say something about that?
I do, but I first want to go back to, I'm glad you mentioned the comic scenario, and I worked very hard, we as a team worked very hard to make this film entertaining and have that Ed Abbey feel of a sense of humor and provoking, and that you're not leaving the theater with a sense of dread, and sometimes like you do when you see documentaries on the environment and wilderness. So I do think we achieve that. As far as Earth First, we do. Dave Foreman was influenced and a friend of Edward Abbey's, and the Monkey Wrench Gang was sort of in the beginning, sort of their Bible, I would say. And it was really important to bring up Earth First because of their importance to the environmental movement. And then we talk about the what happens when you go too far, and that was with ALF and ELF.
We're going to talk about that as we go along. ML Lincoln is with us, produced and directed Wrenched. We have Jack Leffler with us. We have Ken Sanders with us as well. We're showing the film Thursday at 7 o'clock at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in downtown Salt Lake City. It's part of our Through the Lens series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. And there's also a screening in Moab on March 15th. We'll give you all the details about that on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. We'll take a break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're profiling another documentary film in our series, Through the Lens, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. We're talking about M.L. Lincoln's film Wrenched, which is about, it's about Edward Abbey, but it's also about his influence on the environmental movement. We're screening it on Thursday. We'll give you the details about that as we go along. M.L. Lincoln is joining us today from a studio in Moab. Jack Leffler is with us, one of Ed Abbey's closest friends. Story and writer, producer as well. He's joining us from a studio in New Mexico, and Ken Sanders is joining us here in the studio. He's the owner of Ken Sanders Rare Books and, of course, another friend of Edward Abbey. Ken Sanders, there's a moment in the film where you, ML sort of gets us to the sort of, she brings this story around to the concerns today, the environmental movement today. The point, as she was saying before, when does environmental activism go too far? What's the boundary? What's the limit? Those kinds of things. And there's this moment in the film where you talk about, you say that if you were to have a conversation with Ed Abbey today.
Oh, I've had that conversation.
Have you? I bet you have. You say you would wonder if monkey wrenching is going to get the job done today.
Yeah, it's just like wood old school monkey wrenching, you know, putting sand and sugar in various machinery parts. And it's harder and harder to burn down billboards when they're made out of metal. they almost seem like symbolic acts to me now. And in fact, I think the monkey wrench gang now, life is imitating art. We've gone far beyond the fictional monkey wrench gang, and not just with groups like Earth First and Peaceful Uprising. But what's the point? The part of it is the classic conundrum, as every wilderness or environmental or conservation battle we ever have, the wins are always temporary and the losses are forever. And the stakes today are so much greater than they are today. Today, even though it's clouding up out behind you in the Oakers and the Salt Lake Valley, the air is clean. That's been a real rarity this winter. And that affects blue people and red people and every kind of people that live on the planet, because we all – and when you don't have time to get into all the issues, that isn't the point.
What do you mean, though? Your question is whether or not now it's just sort of a charming relic, the idea of the monkey wrench game?
Well, it's historical. I don't think you could film the novel today as a contemporary cutting-edge film.
Right.
I think it's a historical drama, and that we've evolved past that. And back to your direct question, the old school tactics I don't think are going to work in the modern world. And direct action, monkey wrenching, we talked about it as a metaphor early on. It is a metaphor. And whether you're going to become an environmental lawyer or a anarchist bookseller or filmmaker or whatever you're going to do, there's a lot of ways to deal with direct action and try and confront these overwhelming environmental problems that the planet is facing today.
Jack Leffler, I want to get you on this, but I want to play another clip from the film because it's, I think, one of the most sort of powerful moments, because it raises this really kind of troubling question in many ways. And it's the artist and a good friend of Edward Abbey, John Dupuy, who says something really powerful. He reflects on this idea of how much good really all that monkey wrenching did in the scheme of things. So, Jack, I want to get you to respond, but first I want to play this moment, again, from the film, Wrenched.
In the monkey wrench gang, at least three of the events actually took place. In retrospect, I wonder if we achieved much at all. I think the only thing we really achieved was a raising of consciousness. That was the main thing, because you couldn't stop that monolith. It was just hopeless.
Jack Leffler, what do you think? I mean, what do you make of all of that?
Well, I think that those of us who are still vigorously burning in our guts about the nature of all of this have to be relentless. And in today's world, what does that mean? Well, to me, what it means is first understanding that much of our United States government, from the top down, has been privatized by corporate America. That the global economy has become by far much more of a driver now than it was even, 40 years ago when the Monkey Wrench Gang was released as a novel. To me, where hope lies, I just returned from spending a week at Duke University back in Durham, North Carolina, working with young Masters of Fine Arts students, and none of them had one trace of cynicism. They all, though, were trying to understand what to do. Well, I think it has to start at the grassroots. I think that one of the things, as Ed pointed out very successfully in many of his writings, was that centralized governance is a terrible mistake. to rely on a centralized government is to admit that you're being governed from the top down rather than from the bottom up. And so I see grassroots resistance occurring in lots of different ways. And in a sense, an almost anarchistic social condition that takes place in places like food co-ops and farmers markets become places where a new kind of grassroots activism can occur in a way bigger than just selling food, but also making people politically active within the context of their home watersheds, their home communities. And so it's the idea. I had the great opportunity to interview the late thinker Eleanor Ostrom, who got the 2009 Nobel Prize for her book Governing the Commons, where she was forwarding the notion of polycentric governance, which meant some sort of level of reciprocity that was between the grassroots and the federal government. I really support that notion, but I think that we have to really, within the context of our home bioregions or our home watersheds, really begin to take over what's happening within there. And I really concur with Peter Kropotkin that it's best done through mutual cooperation. But as Ed Abbey said, when that fails, you're morally obligated to fight it tooth and nail.
We haven't even spent any time on Tim DeChristopher. Ken Sanders, I want to talk a little bit about that because this is an important part of the film. This is, yeah, as I said, ML brings it back around in some ways to the work of the civil disobedience, the action, of course, of Tim DeChristopher.
Edward Abbey's books are inspiring young people today. They certainly inspired Tim DeChristopher, another Appalachian child, come
yeah.
West,
yeah.
and out of his BLM auction actions in 2007, as arose a whole a new environmental movement, if you will, Peaceful Uprising, which I love their slogan, the evolution of revolution. And they are really trying to do through direct action and education and consensus, build something new. Edward Abbey's words are speaking to a new generation. Things like ML's film, Wrenched, is going to allow a larger access to his words. He's selling more books now than he ever did alive. And I do think there is hope for the future, not just for our children and grandchildren, but on down through time. But it's going to take, as Jack alluded to, a lot of heavy lifting.
ML, I wanted to get you on that, this idea of his relevance today. That was obviously something you'd been thinking about for this film. How do we bring it around to today? How are you thinking about that?
Well, I'm seeing that, as I've said before, that we really need a lot more direct action. We need a lot more grassroots and consciousness. So even though Ed Abbey was back then, he is today. And everything that he's written and everything that he said is something that we have to take to heart today. As Ken Sanders said, you know, we don't have time to really mess around. I mean, this is it. So what Ed and everybody was talking about back then has come to fruition. So people need to look at what he proposed and how he proposed it.
So let me play one more clip from the film. This is Terry Tempest Williams, who's featured also in the film, the writer, naturalist. She sort of brings it around to this question, how she puts it, how shall I live? How shall we live? Here's Terry Tempest Williams from the film Wrenched.
I think the question that I keep asking myself is, how serious am I? How serious are we? It comes down to some really tough choices about how shall we live? What does that look like? And that requires sacrifice.
Ken Sanders, what would Edward Abbey make of the modern environmental movement, do you think?
He'd be mostly horrified by it, probably. He'd certainly be horrified with what's going on.
Yeah. What would he make of the environmental movement?
I think that the this younger generation, the 20-somethings, whatever. I don't mean to make it a particular age, but it's clearly not Jack and Ken Slight and John Dupuy and myself and Ed anymore, though most of us are still around. I think he would be pleased by things like Tim DeChristopher and Peaceful Uprising and people that are, as Terry alludes to, how serious am I? Well, she's pretty doggone serious, and I spent a day in her classroom a week ago where she showed the film, and she's so engaged with those young people, and she's blowing their minds, and she's exposing them to things, and I think that's direct action.
Jack Lefler, let me give you the final word to that question. What do you think Ed would make of the modern environmental movement? We've got about a minute left. What do you think?
Well, I think that Ed would try to inspire even more vigorous approach to environmental protection right there. And what I think is that he understood that revolution is a hastening of the process of evolution in many ways, and cultural evolution is much faster than genetic biological evolution. And this is the sort of thing that we really have to evolve rapidly right now. And I think Ed would be out there throwing wood on the fire as fast and furiously as he could to invigorate as much grassroots environmentalism, sometimes hardcore, as he possibly could.
Jack Lefler, the author of the book Adventures with Ed, A Portrait of Abby, joined us from a studio in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Jack, it's good to talk to you. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Ken Sanders, founder and owner, of course, of Ken Sanders Rare Books. Ken, thanks for being up here.
Always a pleasure, Doug.
I'm ML Lincoln, produced and directed the film Wrenched. ML, thanks to you.
Thanks, Doug.
We're showing the film Wrenched on Thursday at 7 o'clock at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in downtown Salt Lake City. It's part of our Through the Lens series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. For the details, go to our website. There's also a screening in Moab on March 15th, radiowest.kuer.org. Radio West, a production of KUER News, the program produced by Elaine Clark and Benjamin Bombard. I'm Doug Fabrizio.